Welcome to the Future of Supply Chain podcast, where we explore strategies and insights to supply chain, operations, and inventory planning. Join us as we talk to the brightest minds in the supply chain, planning, and operations space to bring you industry-leading knowledge. We'll uncover what's working in the retail space and explore solutions to common inventory challenges. And most importantly, we'll cover what the future of supply chain holds, a future that is in our very own hands. I'm your host, Divya Bade from Fuse Inventory, a female-founded inventory planning software powering the future of commerce.
So I would say if you want to further your career even more, reach out for every book that you can get a hold of, every webinar, every white paper, every document that has something to do with what the interest that you have.
That's James Jacoby, Head of Operations for Clarity Cosmetics, as well as Professor and Subject Matter Expert for Supply Chain Analytics and Technologies at Georgetown University.
Throughout my history, I've been lucky enough that people have recognized something in me and allowed me to grow.
James has over 35 years of experience in supply chain and operations across not one, not two, but several business sectors, including consumer goods, technology, personal services, direct-to-consumer, pet care, and construction, just to name a few. All of that, combined with his MBA, Six Sigma Green Belt, and multiple certifications, make this a value-packed episode, so make sure you take good notes. We're going to dive into how he maximizes customer value, achieves sustainable competitive advantage, and so much more.
James, you have an incredibly impressive background with over 35 years of experience. Can you please tell us about it, how you got started, and what you're doing today?
How I got started? I started throwing cases in a warehouse. I was part of the Teamsters Union. I went to a long story before I started throwing cases in a warehouse, but I went to college and I played football for a year and decided that college wasn't the right thing for me at that time. And I became a Teamster and worked in a warehouse and a distribution center and threw cases, you know, on a midnight shift. And then ultimately grew up and became a manager in the warehouse. I could have became a shop steward or went and managed it. So I went management. And next thing you know, I was running a shift. Next thing you know, I was running a building. Next thing you know, I was building buildings. Next thing you know, I was building a supply chain department. I went from there, working for a grocery organization here in the East Coast for over 20 years, and then went into the professional hair care business, totally different. Left the corporate billion-dollar company and became part of a small 400 million family run organization, totally different. Built a distribution and logistics department and then went and built a supply chain department there. And then got involved in everything from building CRM, back end CRM, front end real estate lifecycle programs, ERP systems, POS systems, got heavily involved in that and became a really the vice president of corporate operations for the company. Ultimately left there, became a COO of a IT company. Kind of changed. I was always the customer and now I became the vendor. We had 82 roughly clients and what we did was anything from the IT space, including ERP systems, which ServiceNow ERP system was just coming onto the market, and we were one of the first six companies that had that capability to utilize ServiceNow. Stayed there, and the company was sold to Konica Minolta. Left there and went into consulting for a little while, and then got asked to get involved in the direct consumer business. Became an SVP of operations in direct consumer business, handled everything from IT, supply chain, distribution, logistics, any of the operations of the company, including risk and quality. Reported under me, and that company was sold to another bigger company. And then I decided I was going to change and go into the construction and backdoor backyard living experience company, family run organization, about a $20 million organization, became their COO, put their systems in place, and then said, you don't need me anymore. We're good. And basically went out into the market again and was found by Clarity Cosmetics, referred to go to Clarity Cosmetics. Originally, I was their consultant for all of their supply chain, distribution, logistics, operations programs. And ultimately, they asked me to join the organization as the first associate of the company in March of 2020.
And in addition to that, I know you're also, you know, mentoring your team, but you're also mentoring the brightest minds of this next generation.
Yeah, all throughout my life, I've always wanted to give back. I wanted to do something, you know, and help people not do what I did, but learn from the obstacles that I had to overcome. And I started teaching at University of Maryland. I started teaching supply chain and purchasing. And then I got recommended to talk to Georgetown. Georgetown University was just starting a master's in supply chain management program, and went in and talked to Georgetown. And Georgetown asked me to kind of develop a course, which is supply chain analytics and technologies, and gave me the opportunity to kind of build my own course. And what I really did with the help of everyone at Georgetown was take my 35 years of experience, put it into 15, 16 weeks, and partner graduate students with organizations to be able to get real life experience and be able to help an organization from the outside, really taking in an external consulting view and really looking at the total overall supply chain, you know, taking it from a data analytics piece, a forecasting piece, a fact-based sustainability piece. And then, of course, with the technologies and the emerging technologies, cognitive technologies, but really also kind of button that up all the way across into the strategic plan of an organization. So give the graduate student the capability of looking at gap analysis and statement of works and really doing a supply chain strategic roadmap, or doing a one-page strategic plan, and or getting them exposed to CRM programs, ERP systems, anything that's out there, and really understanding that you need to start with a blueprint or an architecture of an organization system. So been doing that for, this is my fourth semester, 2 years. And been very successful with it. Partner organizations love the opportunity. Graduate students love being involved in real life situations and learning from organizations.
So you have an interesting approach to what you're teaching. It's coming from the current state of supply chain. How much of what is learned in the classroom carries over to the skills that they're going to need to use for the companies that they go into today?
So the goal is to build a supply chain leader. And in today's world, to become a supply chain leader, you need to be exposed to multiple facets of the supply chain. So what we did in my course is give them the tools and create a tool set that they at least are exposed to it and understand it, so that they can lead people, because you have to lead in different areas in today's supply chain. You have to understand, of course, technologies. You have to understand distribution or fulfillment. You have to understand logistics. You have to understand forecasting, procurement, supply and demand. You have to understand all those pieces and kind of coordinate that into labor management. It's huge. And how do you run HR and understand contact centers? And how do you understand customer relation management programs, which tie into marketing? And then how do you build that and understand each and one of those applications? Because when you walk in as a supply chain leader, right? I mean, it's not just like it was when I grew up. If you could run a distribution center, that's what you did and you ran it all the way through. In today's world, it's not like that. You need to understand visibility. You need to understand transparency. You need to understand collaboration. You need to understand accountability. You need to understand consistency. And most of all, you got to keep the focus.
Mm-hmm. So basically, you would need to know everything to be a strong leader when it comes to supply chain in kind of the world that we're in today.
What I would say to you is you do not need to be a subject matter expert in mm-hmm. each one of those activities or those channels of the supply chain. You have to understand what everyone is doing within your department, your area, and your company. Mm-hmm. Truly, the supply chain over the last 2.5 years because of COVID, because of now with what's happening in the world in Ukraine, supply chain has become a profit center. Mm-hmm. Whereas 10 years ago, 20 years ago, supply chain was an expense center, mm-hmm. right? You just spent money. You went out and you looked at technologies. You did other such things. It was always a capital cost. They were trying to get an ROI back on it. In today's world it's how do I optimize the supply chain so that I can optimize my capital and my dollars mm-hmm. and take that to build my business. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the only way I can do that is looking at the supply chain as a total. Mm-hmm. And so to be a supply chain leader, I have to be able to understand those pieces mm-hmm. and be able to prioritize what's the most important. And again, it might not just be on dollars. It might be on morale of an organization. It might be productivity in an organization. It might be cash. Mm-hmm. It might be cash flow. It could be any of those things. It may be just because the C-suite of an organization wants to go down this path because the shareholders or stakeholders want them to go down that path. Mm-hmm. So you need to understand these things if you want to become a supply chain leader.
I want to dive into that a little bit because so I come from the startup world myself. And so I know, you know, as a small team, you don't have all the resources in place to really have everybody focusing on all these different areas. So for those individuals who are in a position where they do have to prioritize and you know, at the end of the day, it might come down to shareholders' expectations. What is your advice to them? Like, should they develop a supply chain to that satisfaction for the shareholder, or do they need to be able to really balance and find a way to really still find a way to optimize profits and the team and all the other stuff that goes into it?
Well, what I would say in today's world, depending on the size of the organization, you know, it might be advantageous for an organization who's doing somewhere between $1 and $10 million to really look at an SCAAS, which is a supply chain as a source, and looking at someone, again, keeping someone in your organization who understands supply chain, but take it out to the experts and really look at a third party that can handle all those aspects until you have the capital or until you built the volume to be able to go internal. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would say to most organizations who are at that 1 to 10 million. Once you get to 10 million, 10 million to 100 million, that's when you better start building a supply chain. Mm-hmm. However, I have to tell you, I did it a little bit differently in the new organization that we have. I know the focus and I know the attention to a new direct to consumer organization, how important it is to understand what your margins are. So my first hire was a supply chain merchandising planning analyst. Mm. That's what it was. And she's fantastic. And she does multiple things across the board. But I also built the infrastructure when we started. Most startup organizations do not spend money on the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. What they spend money on is marketing, mm-hmm. brand equity. Okay. And how do I drive the funnel? How do I get more customers into the funnel? Not realizing that they can drive all the customers they want, but if the supply chain can't handle it, it just doesn't work. And so you better have the capabilities of understanding what your supply chain is and the infrastructure, including technologies, to be able to handle that volume as you grow. Because what ultimately happens is, and I've seen it hundreds of times, is that people who don't do it right up front, what happens is that it takes them 3, 5, 7 years and pain and suffering, okay, to really do a transformation in their organization.
Yeah, definitely. I want to dive into this a little bit more in terms of this infrastructure piece, because it is so critical as these brands are starting out, you know, year one to three, if you want to say that, you know, say 1 million to 10 million, if you want to say that. And then as they're really scaling up beyond that, what is your advice kind of looking at, and are those the right, you know, segments to look at it, but what is your advice in building infrastructure in kind of that early stage and then, you know, setting it up for success more for kind of the latter stages?
So, what I would say in today's world that you have the capability of going out and really finding a boutique enterprise resource planning system, really with any size organization. Let's just say you're a consultant and you have one yourself as a consultant. There are boutique ERP systems, enterprise resource planning systems, that can handle anything you need them to handle. And they are, from an optimization of cost standpoint, it is incredibly inexpensive to utilize these tools that are out there. However, if you don't focus on it and you just spend it and it sits out there and it's not utilized the way it should be, you know, it's not advantageous for you. But organizations that take the time and effort to understand, build, and really look at the architecture of what they have, and stop looking at how do I snap another application onto another system? How do I look at my financials and how do I get all my data in one place? I love master data management. You know, I learned it through the Oracle implementation, and it just is so, so important in today's world. But owners, co-founders, presidents, and CEOs don't look at data. Mm-hmm. They look at how do I drive? How do I drive the sales? How do I do the other things? Rather than looking at it from the standpoint of, if I have the right data and I have it all in one place, mm-hmm. I can really make some good decisions from it. Mm-hmm. So what I would say to you is, no matter who you are and what you are, you look at the opportunity first. Don't go out and buy a QuickBooks for your financing, SurveyMonkey for your surveys, you know, and other applications that are not going to allow you to do the best things that you need to do for your business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As you're starting out, have a whole view of what your business is and what the needs are, and then from there, really dissect it into what the appropriate tech stack looks like for your.
I think it's more important to say, who do you want to be when you grow up? Mm. I think that's a question that we all ask ourselves in a new startup. You know, we walk fine lines, right? I mean, we could be involved in the grocery business and we never delivered anything before, and all of a sudden we've got to get into the grocery business. But I think that we need to, you know, define it, you know, create the plan. I go back to my Six Sigma days: define it, measure it, analyze, improve it, and control it. And that's the capability of really starting an organization to get going in the right direction. And then you can build from that. Okay. How do I limit the gaps to not being successful? How do I take down those obstacles that get me to where I want to go, mm-hmm. and how I want to get there? And mm-hmm. I think it's very important that you understand those pieces. Mm-hmm. And that ties into the culture of the organization. I mean, what's the culture like? You know, if a CEO of an organization does not want to really put an importance on data or on technology and systems, but wants to do something else, you know, by, you know, CAC in a marketing program and say, hey, I want a cost to acquire a customer, that's what's going to happen. So mm-hmm. it really has to be from top down, and the culture of an organization. And once that is, organization's not going to be stopped, because the organization's going to do the right things. And that's very, very important.
So, sounds like you definitely need a really strong leader within your organization. Hopefully it's somebody that you're teaching, but if it's not, what are some of the qualities that a founder of an organization can look for in the right supply chain leader that can consider all these different needs of the business?
I think it boils down to three things. And that is that, first of all, accountability. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think the second thing is being consistent. Mm-hmm. And I think the third thing, which is probably the most important piece, is the decision to do the right things. Mm-hmm. Not things right, the right things. Mm. There's a huge difference. Mm-hmm. So applying some sort of common sense. Mm-hmm. But the right leader will be self-accountable. Mm-hmm. And they won't blame others for something that has happened. They mm-hmm. will take that. And consistency, if they believe in consistency across the board, that will take care of the accountability piece. Mm-hmm. Because consistency drives accountability, right? That's what it does. And then those common sense things of having the capability of really the decision to do the right things are huge. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think you need a person who is always striving to continuously improve. I say it to my students all the time. You wouldn't be here if you weren't striving to continuously improve yourself. Why would you be in this master's program trying to better yourself and better organizations if you didn't want to continuously improve? And so that's going to come from a high performer. Mm-hmm. Those will come big time from a high performer. Mm-hmm. Two other things that I would say are honesty and integrity. Mm. Transparency is huge in today's world. It's not the same where it was, you know, when I was running a warehouse, do it because I say do it. Today it's do it because it's the right thing to do. And it's the right thing for the business, and it's the right thing for the people, because they come hand in hand. And so huge, huge. Leaders in today's world have to understand that it's not just about them, but they're all in it together. Mm-hmm. You know, going back to what we talked about before from a collaboration standpoint.
Yeah, no, definitely. I want to hone in on you mentioned transparency, which brought to mind what you were mentioning earlier in terms of what you're teaching your students. You know, there's tech, there's, you know, distribution, et cetera. And of course, there's visibility and transparency as it relates to supply chain. Given the state of affairs today and given the labor market today and you know, costs going up, how does one balance all these desires? You know, we want to have transparent supply chains and sustainable supply chains. We want to, you know, have the best and the brightest, and we want to be able to do it profitably. How do we navigate all of these things?
Well, I think that we take an organization that is proactive rather than reactive. Mm-hmm. And some of those things that are involved in that, of course, is, you know, whether we're forecasting correctly. If we're not only doing key performance indicators, but key performance predictors, those things that we need to do to be able to make sure that, depending on the organization, that we can balance the two together, right? Mm-hmm. Balance the capital versus the cash flow. Mm-hmm. And understanding those pieces that you have to have. In the supply chain world, in today's climate, environment, it's no longer just in time. Mm-hmm. It's just having it mm-hmm. is huge. So you have to plan. I'll give you a perfect example. We're a small organization, but we've already planned all our purchase orders all the way through the end of 2023. Mm-hmm. So we've got ourselves to say we've created a forecasting demand. Then we have to create the ability to supply that demand. And we've gone to our vendors and said, hey, here's where we are. Most organizations, the small organizations, they don't have that. Mm-hmm. You know, again, we built the infrastructure up front, right? I have mm-hmm. a boutique ERP system. So we built the infrastructure up front, knowing that the importance that it was, because we, you know, right at COVID, once COVID started, wow. I mean, the whole world changed and supply chain changed. And we've been very fortunate. Over 3 years, we've ran out of two products for less than 10 days, and it wasn't our fault. Mm-hmm. It was a vendor's fault. Mm-hmm. So I think that's huge. I think it's really understanding how do you get proactive mm-hmm. in everything that you do on a daily basis. You know, we can go into, you know, demand sensing or demand shaping or the technical aspects of it. I think the other piece is that not what we did learn through COVID too is AI and machine learning are very valuable tools. Okay. But you still need to have the human factor.
Sure.
You have to have someone who understands and puts a little bit of that human nature in there.
Sure, yeah.
But I don't think you're going to be able to always plan, you know, form an act of God. I mean, what's happening, you know, disaster in COVID. And, but if you have an organization that's 80% proactive and 20% reactive, mm-hmm. that's a huge difference between 40% proactive sure. and 60% reactive. Okay. And, I think small organizations don't even look at that. All they do is, what do I have to do tomorrow? How do I get tomorrow? Rather than saying, what am I going to look like in 18 months?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Hopefully, you know, I answered your question.
No, absolutely. And then some. And now I have more questions.
Okay.
You said you've only ran out of a couple of products, you know, not any fault of, mm-hmm. of your own. I assume that's due to the fact that you're forecasting out to 2023. I'm curious, is that the appropriate timeline? Should brands be forecasting out further than that? What is the right point at which somebody should be looking ahead?
So demand sensing would say short-term plan, right? That's what you would look at, which ties in demand shaping. What I would say to you is I always go with Moore's Law. Moore's Law is, of course, 18 months. Technologies change every 18 months. Mm-hmm. And so I always plan that in my head. And I say, don't look 3, 5, 7 years down the road. Mm-hmm. Go 6 months, 12 months, and 18 months. Mm-hmm. Okay? And that's how you need to plan. That's how you need to forecast. That's how you need to look at your organization, especially in a growth organization, because in a growth organization, today you could be doing 10 orders and in 6 months you could be doing 3,000 mm-hmm. quickly, mm-hmm. really quickly, depending on what's happening over on the marketing side, and what they're doing and what they're looking for and what algorithms are they playing in Google and other such things. Okay. And have they gone through that whole piece of data segmentation, customer profiles, and lifetime value? I mean, we can throw all those things into this mix too. But what I would say to you is don't go past 18 months. And I say that not only in from a business standpoint, but from a career standpoint. I think you need to look at those things because things change so quickly. But that's always been my guideline. Moore's Law has always been my guideline because I know if technology is going to change, I'm going to have to change. And I'm going to have to look at continuous improvement in a different way.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned something earlier, KPIs and KPPs, which is key performance predictors. So what's the difference there? What's a KPP?
So a KPP is a key performance predictor that gives you the capability to predict instead of a key performance indicator, an indicator. So it kind of breaks it down. It was, and I love the terminology because it was started by an MIT professor who really said to the, built out this whole program to look at how do I predict and hold people accounting for predicting rather for indicators and hold them accountable for that. It's a great book out there. I've not read it yet, but I've been part of multiple webinars on it. And what I would say is if you tie the two together, key performance indicators and key performance predictors, your organization is going to do that much better, especially if you're a manufacturing organization.
You talked about demand sensing and shaping a little bit. I want to dive into that further.
So demand sensing, you know, again, is short-term planning. You know, where I'm looking at POS data or competition or open orders and really the capability of looking at how do I plan for the short term and how do I look at the short term and then how do I better recognize my forecasting capabilities, which I think, you know, again, it's more of a how do I want to say this? It's not a predictive nature. It's a prescriptive nature in mm-hmm. forecasting that gives you the capability of really looking short term for mm-hmm. sensing things or patterns within your data to be able to forecast for the short term. I think that leads into demand shaping. Demand shaping is, of course, you shape the demand. You create the promotions. You use the growth. You collaborate with an organization across the board to be able to say, look, what kind of lift are we going to get on this? we're going to create a promotion across the board or look at a planning calendar across the board because we have the demand sensing information so that we can build to that demand shaping process and forecasting.
Gotcha. So is it demand sensing is really like the kind of the triggers, the warning signs, you know, there's certain thresholds that you exceed, and then shaping is kind of like, how do we get it back to our ideal state?
Right. And the way I look at it is I'm more of a demand shaping guy because I like to run planning and I love to do planning calendars. Mm-hmm. And then I take both of those activities really from the data standpoint. But remember, go back to where we are and we have data all in one place, and then run it through and then go into, you know, those planning processes. Mm-hmm. We in our organization every week are monitoring daily basis on demand sensing, what's going on with our forecasts and looking at it from that standpoint and then turn around and shaping it. Okay. Hey, guess what? You ran a promotion for 10% off. You got a 15% lift in volume. How do I do that again? How do I look at that without being able to, you know, train my customers to only be looking for a discount?
Sure. What are you comparing in terms of timeline? Are you just using kind of current state, like trailing weeks, months? Or are you comparing previous COVID periods?
No, I'm looking week to week, to be honest with you, in today's world.
Yeah.
We meet on a weekly basis and we update all our forecasts on a weekly basis.
Oh, wow.
Because we're a growth organization, you know, tomorrow we could be in Amazon.
Sure.
We can be in Walmart tomorrow. So that will change our total forecast. 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, that will change it completely.
Sure.
And we also have, you know, wholesale programs that are come up like this because we're trying to drive business in different channels.
Right. What is your advice on managing those opportunities as they're coming to fruition, especially, you know, as we look at just managing our S&OP process in general? What are some of the considerations these brands should take in place as these opportunities come up?
First, what I would say is implement an S&OP process. that would be the first thing. Most smaller organizations do not understand what the S&OP process is. And I think that needs to come from the leadership. Executive leadership will drive it. And then understanding that you got to break down the silos. And I think that's huge too. That's very hard because in smaller organizations it's great because there really isn't any silos. They haven't built up over a long period of time.
Sure.
But in larger organizations, of course, you know, people are pigeonholed and put into this silo and that's where it is. And then it goes up to the C-suite and then they argue about who's getting the money. It's just a long, break them all down, collaborate across the board. And remember, we're all in this together. And that's huge. Too many times people are in it for the one versus the us, if you want to call it that. Once you get not only leadership on that page and you get everyone who's in middle leadership and then everybody else on the bottom, who understands that it's all together, you can't be stopped from that standpoint. I think collaboration, again, it's a buzzword in today's world, but it's true. How do I collaborate across the board in these processes? S&OP, monthly. I think that you as a bigger organization, again, normally August, September, you're creating the S&OP process. You're getting everybody together, especially the chiefs in an organization. And then you're looking at it on a monthly basis. You know, I've been part of organizations that will say it's 6 months, project one, project two. You know, they'll do it based on, you know, again, act of God or hurricanes or other such things that they do. Based on their projections. But I think you need to do it on a monthly basis and it needs to be part of that, you know, C-suite founder leader discussion on a monthly basis. Smaller organizations like us who have to be agile. I mean, we have to have structure, but have flexibility because we have to understand what the demand is coming. It needs to be done on a weekly basis or you're going to get caught off guard. You're going to pay a price in today's world because you don't know what's going to happen next. Because we understand that the petroleum situation in the world today is going to totally relate to components, because of plastics, because they're a petroleum product, you know, it's going to affect the total supply chain. So how do you get out ahead of it? If we didn't meet on a weekly basis and talk about it, we wouldn't be able to plan for the future.
Yeah. And is this a dialogue is happening, or what are the things that the individuals as part of this conversation should be bringing to the table?
So you need multiple people. Okay. So you need someone from your finance organization. You need someone from your supply chain organization. You need someone from your marketing organization or merchandising marketing organization, and you need leadership. Mm-hmm. Okay. I've always found that if you have someone who's an administrator or something else, totally outside, who has a different view, especially the human view, the people within the organization, getting them together and talking about all the issues and problems that you have. And I think that's the capability of building that team. And I know I don't want to throw out the buzzword about centers of excellence, but that's what it is. It's really, in my day, it was called a quality circle. It's a center of excellence. And the capability of meeting and focusing on what the plan and the priorities are. And really, again, resolve them, just not fix them, but resolve them and move on and finish and complete. Mm-hmm. You know, keep the focus and go after it based on what the organization says. Mm-hmm. I keep going back to this. If you try to do 40 things in a year, it's not going to happen.
Right.
If you try and do 3 and you have collaboration across the board, you're going to get them done. And that's going to give you the capability of really building your organization, depending on what the priorities are.
Mm-hmm. I know there can be different priorities. I imagine still to some degree, profitability is a top, you know, 1 to 3 that people are driving towards. Given everything right now, given inflation, supply chain delays, you know, what's happening with oil, do you think that it's still possible to improve profitability today?
I do. And I use the organization I'm currently with. And I think that if you keep the focus and you keep the culture of an organization to continuously improve, there's opportunity. And how do I say that? I say that because, say, for example, and we'll use an example, companies, Joe Smith's company, whoever it is, goes out into the market and they're starting out by themselves. They're co-founders. They have no idea about supply chain. So they go out and they hire someone or get somebody from a relationship standpoint, and they come in and they buy, let's just say, water gallon jugs, okay? Mm-hmm. And they buy the water gallon jugs. They're not getting the optimal price. They're buying them just to get them, to have them, because mm-hmm. they don't understand that MOQs, they don't understand the capabilities of how do I get someone to hold and pay for the inventory, and then I pull it as I need it. All these other activities that come up after you get started will drive, okay, the capability to save money. And at the same time, how do I get not only a tier one supplier, but a tier two supplier in every activity that I have in my supply chain? Mm. So I have competition, mm-hmm. okay? Most smaller organizations say that they don't have the time or effort. I got to focus on something else. It doesn't matter to me. Spend the capital, hire an expert, have someone come in and really focus on that, and then watch what happens. Mm-hmm. How do I get supplier A to compete with supplier B? Mm-hmm. Or I have supplier A offshore and supplier B onshore. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then how do I negotiate? Mm-hmm. How do I negotiate with these companies to say, you know, I just don't have the capital in today's world. I'm not Pepsi, but maybe a vendor wants to come in and say, I want your business in the future. Here, I'll pay for it. I'll store it for you. And then you pull it as you need it. Then I know that I have volume coming out. But he put the capital down, or she put the capital down. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying everybody can do this, but it can be done if you focus on it and you make it one of your top priorities. Mm-hmm. Again, it comes from what is the plan of the organization? Mm-hmm. Who do I want to be and how do I want to get there? And then what do I look like on a daily basis? What am I looking at? Can I take the supply chain and optimize it? Mm-hmm. I think too many times we just say, I need it. I just got to have it.
Right.
Okay. I don't care where I can get it from or how I get it from. No. That's because you're being very reactive rather than proactive. Did you forecast correctly? Did you look at your data correctly? Do you have the right people in place who are interested in bettering the organization? I think all those play a part. And I think no matter what, if you have the right technology in place and you're continually improving the technology and utilizing the technology that was implemented, you can do it. It's not a problem.
If I have one supplier right now, you know, let's say I started out with that one supplier and I know I want to become more competitive across all the components, as you're suggesting, where do I go? Like, how do I start that process? Is it a Google search or are there specific resources that I can utilize?
So depending on the industry, there's multiple resources in industries. Let's just say the beauty industry. They have a consortium of all the people who do business, vendors, marketers, consultants, et cetera, into a portal mm-hmm. where you can go and get access to it mm-hmm. if you want to join their beauty industry consortium. That's one way to do it. The second thing is it depends on where you are and what you've come from. Mm-hmm. So develop relationships with colleagues across the board in multiple industries to be able to pick up the phone and call people and say, what do you think? How do I find another company to do this? Or what are you doing? Because most organizations have someone who's a competitor in your own organization or non-competitor, but maybe doing similar things to you mm-hmm. and, you know, ask them, who do you recommend? What do you think? How do I find these glass jars? How do I find these ingredients? What do I do? I'll give you a perfect example. So about 6 months ago, my manufacturer came to me and said, hey, guess what? I can't get this product. I can't get this ingredient for you. You're going to run out. I can't get it for you. I said, oh, stop. Hold on for a second. Give me the spec sheet. Tell me who you're buying it from, and then let me go out. I picked up the phone. I called three of my resources that I knew. And the next thing you know, I bought the ingredients off the market for $10 per kilogram less than she bought.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
So it's a question of taking the time and effort to go after it, to make that happen. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to do that. I could have said, hey, guess what? You know, I'm going to be out of stock for 6 months because I can't get this ingredient. Mm-hmm. If there's a will, there's a way, mm-hmm. and you have to keep the focus. The most important to me is being in stock, because every time I'm out of stock, technically, marketing wouldn't tell you this, but I'm going to tell you this, you'll lose a client. Marketing would say it's better because demand outseated, everybody's going to want it, right? I mean, that's what they're going to say to you. But to me, if the customer comes on my website or goes to a store and doesn't have the product, that's a sale I just lost.
Sure.
And to me, I'm never out of stock. I mean, that's what supply chain is about. How do I drive my service levels, you know, to be 5.9s, even though I know I understand the law of diminishing returns, that I take it from 95 to 99.999, it's going to cost me money. But if I can get there and I can get there and optimize the cost, that's what I want to do.
Goes back to what you were saying earlier. It's no longer just in time. It's now just have
it. Yes. I love that. And I also would say to you that I think the supply chain is developing, because I teach the leaders, more and more leaders who are learning more about the supply chain mm-hmm. And learning more about real life versus, you know, when I started a supply chain department in a grocery store in 2000, you know, who knew what supply chain was? Yes, yeah, some people did, but no one really had any aspect of what supply chain. Mm-hmm. Who knew about vendor managed inventory that Walmart did in the 70s and built it all the way out? You know, no one, you know, it was a very new thing. So Think about it. Supply chain's been around for a long period of time, but I think the focus and attention has been on the last, 20 years.
Sure.
To understand it.
We covered so many important topics, and that's attributable to your 35 years experience. For those of us that don't have that yet, how do we learn what took you 35 years? Are there resources? Do we go back to school? What's kind of your recommendations there?
I think that what I would tell a new supply chain person, and I've had this conversation in the last 30 days, is how do I get exposed to all the facets of the supply chain? What I would tell you is if I want just security and I want to grow in an organization and kind of grow up through the ladder, then take the big organizations, the Walmarts of the world, the Amazons of the world. Maybe not Amazon. They don't treat the people the greatest, but they do well. They give you the experience and the knowledge, and then you can take it over to somewhere. I would have to tell you, my personal history has always been, I've been the fixer. I'm the guy who comes in and fixes it. Okay. Over the last two and a half years, I've been the builder. And what I would say to you is I've learned more in 2.5 years to understand, because I've had to, than I learned in 30 years. So what I would tell a new supply chain leader, how do I get exposed to everything that I can? Mm-hmm. Go to an organization, a new startup, or an organization that's been around for 5 years. It's not there yet, but be a part of the growth and be a part of the activities that happen in that growth, whether it be building your own internal distribution or a 3PL on the outside, whether it be dealing with commercial logistics providers and understanding what they do versus USPS, FedEx, DHL, et cetera, whether it is understanding truly what an ERP or an enterprise resource planning system is, or even taking it to the next step of the Fuse application and understanding how can I tie that in if I already don't have it in my organization. Okay. Get off the Excel spreadsheet, get off the Google Docs. Okay. Get the data in one place. When you have it in one place, no matter what you're looking at, whether it be sustainability and life cycle assessments, whether it be forecasting for the future, if you have it in one place, it's going to be so much more easier for you. And I think that's the focus and attention. And I think that you need to understand those. And I would say to you, if you were coming to me and saying, hey, I want to get more involved, so go to a smaller organization. Be that small, big fish in a small pond, if you want to say, but you're going to be forced to learn, right? You're going to be forced. You're not going to have 15 people underneath you. You know, when I was at one organization, I had 20 people in my supply chain department. I mean, big difference. New startup, one person.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I would say. Anyone who wants to get involved, get your feet wet. Dive in, learn as much as you can, and continuously improve.
Getting exposed and being in a startup is a great way to really dive into the fire. At what point does it make sense, or would it make sense for somebody to go and get a formal education, either in tandem with or kind of taking a break from?
Well, you're talking to someone that took 17 years to get my first degree. After I got my first degree, it took me 3 years to get my MBA. So I was in my late 30s. And so what I would tell you is do it. Go get your feet wet a year or two later, just like you would someone would suggest from an MBA program. And you want to be in supply chain, go get your master's in supply chain. Again, take all the activities that our program at Georgetown bumble up and, tell you at the end that you've got to do a capstone project and work with an organization of what you've learned over the last 2 years, you'll be much better suited to go into an organization as a leader. But I think it's very important once you get out of college that you take a couple years and you learn real life. I think it's unfortunate sometimes when people go right from college into their MBA program and don't have real life experience, because in the master's programs, you work as teams in a lot of what activities that you do. And what you bring to the table is experience and knowledge. Okay. And good teams, they have all the They have all those activities. They may have someone who's been in business for 20 years. At the same time, they have someone who's, you know, new and understanding and is technology advanced compared to that person who's been out there 20 years. Mm-hmm. And so I think that you need to bring something to the table and you need to have an understanding of it. Because if you don't, and all you have, and please don't get me wrong, like I say, I tell people I'm not a professor, I'm an operator. You know, that's going to make the huge difference in your life. I would also say to you that, you know, sit down and think about creating an outline of what your career development is going to be. Mm-hmm. I would say to you, you know, when you were in high school, you had to build, when you wrote a paper, you build an outline, right? And you had the structure of it. Why aren't you doing the same thing with your career and saying, where do I need to go? What do I need to be exposed to get to that goal? Mm-hmm. Okay. To find and summarize my career. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I don't think that's the end. It continues. It is a continuous improvement process because once you get stagnant, right? Once you've been there, what happens if an organization goes down the tube? Where are you left? You could have been working there 20 years and something happens. You have to have the skills and the knowledge and the education to be able to apply it to any industry, to apply it to any corporation, no matter what size. That's what you need.
Lots of amazing, wonderful advice that you shared with us today. Is there a place that our listeners can go if they want to connect with you or learn more about you?
Yes. They can ping me on LinkedIn if needed. They can also go to my Georgetown email address, which is jj941@georgetown.edu. I will answer either one of those. Feel free to link in with me and let's see if I can help you in any way. I do like to pay things on, and I do like to help people in their companies and their organizations, and that's what I like to do.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of our podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Fuse Inventory, an inventory planning solution for the digital age. Fuse centralizes inventory sales and procurement data to generate a predictive forecast and inventory replenishment plan to help brands scale their supply chain. If you'd like to learn more, please visit fuseinventory.com or follow us on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Plan less and do more with Fuse Inventory.